FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450. Rutherford County's place to talk. Your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
I know you're out there somewhere. Somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere.
Good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. We're going to step back in our time machine today, go back 150 years, right here in Murfreesboro. Gonna step back in time. And manning the time machine this morning, Jim Lewis and Gib Backlund. They are from the Stones River National Battlefield. Is this gonna be a safe trip today?
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Jim was out there yesterday shooting cannons, and so, well, those things, it was interesting when you said they could be heard 90 miles away.
Well, the battle was.
The battle
one cannon couldn't be, but, you know, the Battle of Stones River, you had more than 200 cannons and about 70,000 men firing muskets, and that roar was actually heard by John Hunt Morgan when he was... He was raiding up into Kentucky while the Battle of Stones River was going on, and they reported hearing it going on.
In Kentucky?
Yeah.
From Murfreesboro?
Yeah.
Whoa. I'm glad we were not there.
Mm-hmm. No, that would have been pretty loud.
Oh, you know, when you think about cannons being aimed toward the Rutherford County Courthouse from where the old Fort Park is now, it's hard to conceive that they could do much damage. But if you could hear these cannons, mm-hmm. 90 miles away, the fighting was so fierce, that puts a whole different perspective to it.
Yeah, and in fact, the cannons there at Lunette Thomas, which is part of what the park manages at Old Fort Park, what's left of Old Fortress Rosecrans, as the crow flies, that's no more than a couple miles away from the courthouse, so that's an easy shot for those much bigger cannon than folks mm-hmm. are used to seeing out on the battlefield.
What kind of damage could something like that do if it hit the courthouse?
Well, the first shot would probably have damaged the tower so badly it might have come down, but they would have just kept firing. In fact, it wasn't the courthouse that was the main target. Basically, folks here in Murfreesboro knew if the Confederates attacked again after the Battle of Stones River, the Union Army had basically plans to raise the town to the ground.
Wow. And they had the capability.
Yes.
Frightening. I mean, we're looking back 150 years, that kind of power you don't think about. Mm-hmm. You think about people riding horses here and there. They did, but they had military power, too.
Well, they tore each other to shreds during the Battle of Stones River, which is why here we are coming into the 150th anniversary of that, and we're putting on all these events to commemorate it, what is an important part of our local story and our national story, but also a very horrible part of it as well.
Now, this Friday and Saturday, this one coming up, Friday and Saturday, the Civil War Symposium. Gib Backlund, tell us where that's going to be and why people need to be a part of that.
Well, I think it's important because it is, as Jim said, it's part of the local story, it's part of the national story, and the outcome of the Civil War is still playing out today. We're still dealing with the effects of the Civil War. You know, there was a Civil Rights Act passed in 1865 in Congress and another one in 1965, 100 years later, which, you know, the struggle for freedom for black people in this country continued for 100 years after the Civil War. And so the Battle of Stones River, really, in the western part of the United States, was the first step leading the Union Army through the Confederacy, cutting the Confederacy in half, and pushed on to Chattanooga, to Atlanta, and then the March to the Sea, which everyone's heard about. So Stones River was the first step in that process, and so it's extremely important in American history. And this weekend, we're going to have Larry Daniels speaking. He's written a brand new book about the Battle of Stones River. And it interprets it in a new way. He got lots of sources from letters from soldiers that they had written to newspapers. And so he collected those from from someone else who had been doing research, and so he incorporates a lot of new material in his book, and he's going to be speaking Friday night at the First Presbyterian Church downtown Murfreesboro. And our symposium will continue then Saturday morning at the Presbyterian Church, and then Saturday afternoon at the battlefield. And we've got really an outstanding lineup of speakers. In addition to Larry Daniel, we have Earl Hess, who is at Lincoln Memorial University. He's written a number of books about the campaigns in the West. And Richard McMurray, who has done so as well. And then our own Jim Lewis and Antoinette Van Zelm. Antoinette is the historian at the Tennessee Civil War National Heritage Area. And that's one of our partners in this symposium. The Heritage Area, the Center for Historic Preservation at MTSU, the History Department, and also the Friends of Stones River National Battlefield. We're all working together to put the symposium on, the 150th anniversary symposium, and people are welcome to come out just Friday evening or Saturday, or both, whatever they prefer, or Saturday afternoon at the battlefield. The Friday and Saturday morning events are, we have a fee, it's $20, and then the afternoon events at the battlefield are free.
Okay, now, I noticed on the printed material that we have passed the deadline to register, but obviously there will be people in town, there will be people who probably don't even know they're coming to town, and they arrive here and they love the Civil War. Can they still go to these?
Certainly. In fact, we invite anybody who wants to come to give us a call at the battlefield at 893-9501 and give us your name and let us know you're coming, and you can fill out the registration form. We just need the number to know how much food to order. We've got room for more people in the auditorium, so we do have room, and you can sign up until the day of if you need to, but it'd be better if we know in advance so we have the right amount of lunches and breakfast and that sort of thing.
Now, the sesquicentennial is a very special commemoration.
It's the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, and you know, this is, I think, and for us at Stones River, this is probably the biggest event in the history of the park. The 100th anniversary was important throughout the country, but it was fairly contested as well. The idea of, you know, what was important about the Civil War was shifting, and that was, you know, during the Civil Rights Movement, and a lot of these commemorations during the 100th anniversary really ignored the greater effects of the Civil War. So now here we come to the 150th anniversary, and we have taken a new look at the history, and we're taking a broader look, I think, and so this we expect to be a fairly important occasion for the Stones River National Battlefield. And this is just the kickoff. The symposium is, we'll later on be having a bus tour of the campaign on December 22nd. And that is open to registration. That's limited to about 55 people, so if someone wants to do that, they need to call us and sign up.
And when you say a bus tour of the campaign, how extensive? You talk about the whole Civil War?
Not the Civil War, but you know, when we talk about battles like Stones River, of course, our main interpretation is, you know, what happened on the grounds there from December 31st or January 2nd. Need to keep in mind, though, from time to time, that, you know, the armies had to actually get to that place, particularly the Union Army in this case, moving from Nashville down to Murfreesboro. And there are 4 days of quite a bit of activity and some very unique and important stories that will literally shape how the Battle of Stones River will take place. And so I thought it would be neat, this is a first for me too, to lead a group of folks that are interested in getting a little more into that part of the story. And we will be going to Laverne, Nolensville, Triune, Smyrna, and back into Murfreesboro and around there to kind of retrace the steps of the Union and Confederate soldiers that contested this march of the Union Army from Nashville to Murfreesboro. So it'll take the better part of a day.
Well, now, history takes on a whole different perspective when you stop and think, this might have been happening in my yard. And in many homes all around the area, it did happen. Yeah. In their yards.
I just spoke to a lady from Laverne just a couple of days ago, and, you know, she was shocked to, you know, she was interested in what was what happened around here. And I said, well, you know, you do realize that your town was basically a place where wagon trains sheltered from Confederate attacks, and ultimately through the course of the battle and campaign, it had been hit so hard the town of Laverne was essentially burned to the ground.
Wow.
Because of all the activity going on around there and attacks happening on the wagon trains. And she's like, really? And I said, yeah, that's why you really don't know where downtown Laverne is historic. Like, we have our courthouse and everything. Does anybody know where it is in Laverne? No, because it was gone.
So they had one at one time.
Oh, yeah. Similarly with Tryon. We go down to Tryon. I mean, the town of Tryon that was there in 1860 essentially was destroyed by the Civil War. It was wiped off the map.
And what you're saying is we could have been the same way. They had the
power. I'm sure folks around here felt like that just about right now, 150 years ago.
Well, that's what I was wondering. What was happening?
38,000 Confederate soldiers, the Confederate Army now is spilling into Murfreesboro in October and November of 1862. And you have a town of 3,000 that is now hosting almost 40,000 men. Now, for some, that's a very happy thing because many of the boys, there are almost 1,600 boys from Murfreesboro and Rutherford County who are essentially having a homecoming, which is pretty cool. But nobody can really like have, you know, a town that's designed and has gone supporting 3,000 people. How do you support 40,000 on top of that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for most civilians, honestly, they didn't really care to see an army of either side, no matter what their proclivities were politically.
And to think that 2 months later, those 40,000 would grow to how many?
Well, almost 81,000, because you're going to have the Union Army with its 43,000 men come trumpling down the road. Like, and that's what our tour will be on the 22nd. And then, you know, there we go. We're, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people here realize once the Army of Tennessee, the Confederate Army, arrived here, the ones that thought about it long enough would realize that puts the bullseye right here. You know, the next fight could be here.
And it was.
And it was. And, you know,
when that happened, you started to see the town physically falling apart. I mean, once the battle raged and once it ended with the Union Army winning, this place came apart.
Well, you can see it, and in fact, Antoinette and I—that's going to be the focus of our talk during the symposium—is, you know, the local, what happens to the local folks because of the Battle of Stones River, and, you know, some of the in our the PowerPoint we're going to have, we've actually gone through. We have slides that show really you can almost see the town of Murfreesboro, bit by bit, begin to be transformed, fall, and heck, the place where we're having most of the talks at the First Presbyterian Church, there's a reason why we're having it in what, the third version of their building right now, Gib? The first version was torn down to use as building materials for Fortress Rosecrans.
I understand there's only one piece of that original church remaining. Did you know that?
I'm not sure. Where is it?
It's on the top of the building. It's the bell.
Of this building?
Yeah.
The bell that was at the original church
was supposedly taken down by a group of young people the night before the Union armies came and started taking it apart brick by brick. They hid it in someone's basement, and somebody knows. I don't know the exact. But that was brought back out and mounted on top of the current church. And it's rung every Sunday.
And you know, that we haven't thought about this sort of thing much since the Civil War occurred, because there have been no wars fought on American soil. So, you know, when we're watching TV nowadays and we see the conflicts going on in Syria, for example, or in Croatia some years ago, or you know, wherever around the world, that's what life would have been like here. I mean, it's terrifying and awful to think about the things that occurred, and we're so remote from us from that type of war. I think our perception our perception of war is much different nowadays from what it was of the, you know, for the people who lived here, and I think that's worth thinking about.
And I would imagine if you compared current wars to the Civil War era, it was much more frightening, I would think, in the Civil War era. I mean, let's be blunt about this. If you have a drone coming in and destroy your house, you don't know it's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, it happened, and you're gone in a flash. Back in the Civil War, the enemy was laying low in your front yard, sleeping there. They would take over your house. Mm-hmm. They would probably rape your daughter. Mm-hmm. They would do, and all of these things were slow, dramatic, and horrifying.
Right. And the other thing, too, I mean, the tools of war are much different now, but also the tools of medicine. I mean, if you were injured in the Civil War, you may lay wounded for days, and that doesn't happen in the American Army much anymore. But
you may not want to have help come anyway, because the help that you get from the doctors may be worse than the wound.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, it was cold when the battle was actually raging here in Murfreesboro. Did the weather impact the fatalities? Did it have an impact on that?
It's tough to tell. I think more so hot weather would accelerate casualties a great deal. We know from the campaign previous to the Battle of Stones River, the Perryville campaign up in Kentucky, that men were literally turning. There's all kinds of accounts of men turning red and dropping dead on the march or in the middle of the battle, and we know that's heat stroke. It's hard to say whether, there were men. Certainly there were probably men that died of hypothermia on the battlefield, although there are some folks, particularly some doctors I know, who speculate that, in fact, colder weather may have allowed some men to survive longer because it slows down. As you go into hypothermia, your heart starts beating as fast, and if you're bleeding, you're going to bleed less and might actually allow you to survive longer, but that's really kind of speculation.
So all of this was happening here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and we're going back basically 150 years, and this is going to be relived this Friday and Saturday.
This is the beginning of it, and then, like Gib was saying, then we're going to have our tour on the 22nd, and then starting December 26th, rolling right through January 2nd, we have a very impressive array, I think, of programs from our Ranger Walks, Talks, and Tours, Living History. We're going to be having a screening of some special movies done by our partners at McGavick High School up in Nashville. They did a bunch of movies and submitted them to a contest to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. And we'll be screening those on January 1st, 2013, which is the 150th anniversary of when the proclamation went into effect. Looking to have Mr. Lincoln address us as well. President will be there.
He's going to be around.
His vice president, who will become president, will be speaking to us at the battlefield during the symposium on Saturday as well. So we're going to get have some pretty high profile figures out there.
And this is all happening starting this Friday and Saturday. We're going to pause for just a moment. We will continue the conversation about the sesquicentennial of the Civil War and that big symposium that gets underway this Friday and Saturday. 893-1450 is our number, the segment where you can call in with your questions, your comments. Maybe your front yard was a battleground. If you lived around the Thompson Lane, Haynes Drive area, Riverview, River Bend, that area, you were in the battle area. If you've been out to the avenues of Murfreesboro, you may have been shopping in the battleground area. Now, on out Franklin Road, South Church Street, that whole area. We'll be right back.
Was my brother in the battle when the noble Highland host were so wrongfully outnumbered on the Carolina coast? Did he struggle for the Union mid the thunder and the rain till he fell among the brave on a bleak Virginia? Glory, glory, hallelujah! Glory, 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 hallelujah. His truth is marching on.
We're talking about your local teams. All Sports Talk at 2 and Sports Night 3 to 6. I'm George Plaster on WGNS.
Drive Motor Trend's Truck of the Year, the 2012 Ford F-150. Ford of Murfreesboro currently has the Ford F-150 regular cab available for 0% APR for 60 months. That's the Ford F-150, America's truck. Stop by Ford of Murfreesboro today on Broad Street at Northfield Boulevard, online at fordofmurfreesboro.com.
Hi, this is David Lee, General Manager at Ford of Murfreesboro, and I invite you to come down and see our full selection of Fords, and we'll give you the best deal in town.
The antique and estate jewelry sale is back by popular demand at Bell Jewelers. It'll be Wednesday, October the 24th, from 10 in the morning until 7 at night. Beautiful antique and estate jewelry. And as before, they'll have some celebrity pieces for sale, like Bob Hope's watch that they had last year, or one of Doris Day's necklaces. Circle that date, Wednesday, October 24th, for the antique and estate sale at Bell Jewelers. That is today, 10 until 4, 10 this morning until 4 this afternoon, the antique and estate sale at Bell Jewelers. Whatever you do, don't miss that one. Starts at 10 this morning, continues until 4 this afternoon at Bell Jewelers. That's on Broad across from Toots.
Play it again, sports!
Your football headquarters.
From Under Armour, Shutt, and Reebok, we've got all the gear you'll need for youth football. From pants, helmets, pads, down to the gloves and mouth guards, you'll find everything you need at Play It Again Sports on North Thompson Lane.
Good morning once again. Quite a bit of congestion still. I-24 at 96, I-24 at 231. Traffic easing. 04 Parkway at Bridge Avenue, 04 Parkway at Chaffin Place, 04 Parkway at Kaysen Lane. Also, quite a bit of congestion, Broad at Memorial. We've also got, as you make your way into Midtown, a little bit of congestion, I-24 at the junction with I-40 West. National Flight Training offers affordable flight instruction from FAA-certified instructors who work on your schedule at your pace within your budget. Call National Flight Training at 366-9192. I'm Randy O'Brien with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
For the forecast area today, mainly sunny skies, highs in the low 80s, while the south wind around 5 miles per hour. Clear skies tonight, low 53. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Faluber.
Currently 55.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. We offer checking that comes with a free check card, free mobile and internet banking, as well as free bill payer service. First National Bank of Murfreesboro, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
There is no safer place in the storm. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro. FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, TV 11.
We're back again. Going back 150 years and commemorating the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. This is the music of that era, a little different from today.
Like we used to sing it 50,000 strong while we were marching through Georgia. Hurrah, hurrah, we bring the jubilee. Hurrah, hurrah, the flag that makes you free. So we sang the chorus from Atlanta to the sea while we were marching through Georgia.
Just like today, music tells the history of the times. And this was just part of it. I'm sure there were sad. That was obviously an up-tempo song. There were sad songs because there was probably more sadness than happiness during this era.
Right. In fact, in the afternoon of our symposium, we're going to have a group that is calling itself the Stones River Musicianers. And that consists of Bruce Nemiroff, who was at the Center for Popular Music at MTSU for many years, and Amy Macy, who is in the recording program, a recording artist, and Odessa Settles, a singer from Nashville. They're going to be performing at the Battlefield at 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And Bruce was heavily involved in the production of the Time Life Civil War music, three CD set back in the late 80s, early 90s. He's performs around this area quite often. He and Amy Macy played at the Cannon County Center for Arts just a few weeks back. And to me, one of the neatest things about Bruce is that Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead taught him how to play banjo. But excellent musicians, and they're going to be performing for free at the battlefield on Saturday afternoon, and they're going to be interpreting Civil War music, and I'm really happy that we were able to get them to come out and play. And of course, music was an important part, important tool for armies, and it had a purpose. And you know, they used bugles and drums all the time to send messages, to get troops to move, to send people to bed. You know, so
we don't stop and think about those things. They did not have two-way radios and things of that sort to communicate from one side of the battlefield to the other. So tell us a little about how they did this, and also some more about music and why it was important.
Well, I mean, as Gabe said, I mean, you know, musical commands were used quite a bit, drum, bugle, and particularly the fife, because if you ever heard somebody play a fife, boy, you know it can be heard over almost anything. Other communications, of course, were the simple runners, riders. And the Union Army in particular utilized a signal corps that utilized flags and even telegraphs to send messages, although not so much during the battle as opposed to after the battle when the Union Army spreads out across a goodly chunk of Middle Tennessee. General Rosecrans uses them to basically run the show from right here in Murfreesboro without having to send people back and forth. He can pretty much communicate almost in real time with them. Of course, music, I mean, you know, beyond that, I mean, I always ask folks when we do programs about or talk about music, it's like, who doesn't like music? I mean, and that's, you know, I guess it's one of the ways you can kind of delve into the, you know, the tragedy of this war is that, in fact, these guys have probably more in common than anything that divides them has put them in different uniforms. And one of the big things is indeed the music. I mean, the catalog of music that they like to listen to in camp, although there will be songs developed during the Civil War, most of the music that you would hear around a campfire, if you walk from a campfire of men in gray over to a campfire of men in blue, guess what? You're going to be hearing the same songs.
You're
because
kidding.
They're part
same
of our
songs.
American history. Yeah, because these are the songs that were written in the 1830s, 40s, 50s, and we shared them as Americans. It's part of our story. Like you said, music helps tell our story, and certainly music is being written during the war to tell either side's part of that story. But for the most part, the songs that they're listening to, like on the battlefield, you know, the great story of, you know, how the bands were playing on December 30th and then come to close with everybody playing Home Sweet Home. Well, that's not a song that's written during the Civil War. That's a song that people knew and treasured and, you know, enjoyed prior to that. They brought that with them to the battlefield. And now here you are, the two sides that are about to kill one another for 3 days, sharing this moment with this piece of music that binds them together because they share it and appreciate it in essentially the same way.
Well, now, if you go to the European theater and you have similar situations going on, you don't have that feeling of togetherness. You don't have that background that's similar. And so you had an animosity, which would make it easier to fight each other. But if we come here to the Civil War and you have the background that is similar, the music that's similar, the feelings that are similar. Did that create difficulty in making the people want to fight each other? Did they know why they were doing it?
Apparently not, because they jumped into war pretty good. And I mean, it's a thing that happens, and maybe more so in the Civil War. But you even see it, and you're talking about World War One or World War Two. As human beings, we all share certain things. And it is amazing, particularly in the Civil War, to me, to see these guys almost turn it on and off like a light switch. That, you know, the night before a battle, the two opposing skirmish lines decide, hey, we're not going to shoot each other tonight. Instead, we'll build a little fire out here, you know, uncork a bottle of OB Joyful Juice and, you know, maybe have somebody pull out a harmonica or something. And
now, they never got together at those gatherings, did they?
Sure.
You mean they got together at the fire?
Yeah, they just call a truce and not shoot at each other and more or less kind of get to know each other a little bit. The tragedy is,
come dawn,
they go back to their positions and they are the first ones that will kill one another. And it seems like what happened the night before doesn't really stop them from doing it. I mean, when they go at it, it seems like they go at it with gusto. But then when the battle is over, you know, when the fighting is done on December 31st, it will not stop a Union soldier from stopping and trying to help a wounded Confederate, or, you know, a Confederate soldier seeing a Yankee asking for water to give him his canteen. I mean, they just turn it off, you know, go from being blood enemies to Americans, you know, comrades on, in arms. It's and that's magnified, I think, because, again, both sides are indeed Americans. We have a shared story behind us that really, you know, the men even maybe don't realize it right consciously, but it's there in the subconscious. I mean, there's more that puts us together than is tearing us apart. Thank God, because once this thing is over, we're going to have to put it back together. And we're going to look back to what happened before 1860 to try to do that, I think.
That puts a whole new feeling to the emotion of the Civil War. Now, sometimes, and I've lived in the South all my life, born in Tennessee, lived in Tennessee all my life, sometimes we get the rap of the Civil War is still going on in the South. And yet, I'm wondering, is it historically interesting in other parts of the nation as it is in the South? Is it just alive in the South?
One thing I think is that it is more alive here because the battles were fought here. You know, we're on the ground where that occurred, and I think that's what has power. You know, places like the battlefield have that sort of power over our imaginations because this is the place where it happened. And so, you know, I grew up in Minnesota, and I didn't think about it that much. I mean, but when you come here and you're walking in the place where 80,000 soldiers bludgeoned one another, you have to think about it. And the people who live in town, even though there were only maybe 3,000 people here, including free and slave, during the Battle of Stones River. Of course, we had a ranger that worked at the battlefield who had a great-grandfather who was a lawyer in town and had his books stolen by the Yankee troops. So, I mean, that memory passes down from generation to generation, and memory is a powerful thing. I mean, and it's not always accurate, but it's still... It lives in our imaginations, and that's why I think this place has the power and why the Civil War still lives in a place like this.
One of you told an interesting story yesterday, and we were visiting the Stones River battlefield yesterday. You told an interesting story when you asked the question, are there any Confederates buried in the cemetery right there across from the museum? And what is the answer on that?
The answer is no, at least not knowingly, although there is the one story of the, after the original burials were done in Stones River National Cemetery, about 6,100 Union soldiers, in fact, there was a later discovered under the porch of a farmhouse that had served as a hospital, the unidentifiable remains of about 11 soldiers, which were included buttons from both sides' uniforms, but there was no way to tell who was who, so they did actually indeed bury them all in one grave, and I suspect there were some Confederates there. But, you know, we tell folks, no, in fact, you know, the National Cemetery work burying there began in October of 1865. The Union Army buried both sides dead in trenches on the battlefield, and indeed they buried Confederates just like Union soldiers. But, you know, in October of 1865, people aren't thinking like we think today, 150 years later, yes, both sides are Americans. Almost nobody disputes that today. But back in October of 1865, it's still us and them. And so there's no way the United States government is going to put rebels in its cemeteries. And frankly, there's no way people in Murfreesboro here would have stood for having their boys buried next to those blankety-blank-blank Yankees.
Another aspect of that is to think about is that during the Civil War, of course, medicine was not what it is today, and the disposal of bodies was not what it is today. That we had not, the American Army had not come up with a way to deal with mass casualties. There was no system in place to take care of the dead. And during the course of the Civil War, they figured out that they needed to keep track of of these soldiers and to notify their families that they had died. You know, Stones River National Cemetery, excuse me, the National Cemetery system came about as a result of the Civil War. Gettysburg was the first, of course. And it was dedicated by Lincoln in 1863. But so during the course of the Civil War, they figured out we got to find a way to bury them. They didn't have an easy way to transport, I mean, all these bodies back home. So they established cemeteries right in the places near where they fell and brought the bodies to the cemetery. And throughout the Civil War, if you go to Civil War cemeteries, you're going to find this number across the board, 40% are unknown. There was no way of identifying the bodies. And that would be unthinkable today. We wouldn't even tolerate a single body in Iraq or Afghanistan being unknown. And now we have DNA, but back then they had nothing. The soldiers would write their names on their Bibles and put them in their pockets, hoping that if they were found dead, somebody would let their families know.
Now, Jim, going back to your statement of how during the battle, in the evening hours, they would declare a truce, have a big bonfire, pull the cork out of a bottle.
I'm not speaking to our battle specifically, but we do have stories of this happening, where, you know, particularly right before the initial part of a battle, that the men posted out ahead of each main line as called skirmishers, which were basically your warning system. If the enemy starts coming, you shoot, and your shooting wakes everybody else up behind you. Well, their standing order was basically shoot anything that moves on the other side, and a lot of times they would just say, well, we're going to kill each other tomorrow anyway. We might as well enjoy tonight.
Let's party tonight.
Yeah, and they would just shout out, hey, Johnny Reb, you want to call a truce? And they're like, yeah, the officers aren't around. Let's go ahead and do that. And
they
would
together.
Literally act as friends. Mm-hmm. And then they would also be the first ones that would be shooting at each other come dawn the next day.
Okay, so we have that picture in our mind. We also have the picture that you just described of the burial of the deceased soldiers both sides, and that the Southern families would think, I don't want my child living or being buried next to that Yankee. Totally different feeling there. Was the public sentiment totally different from that of the soldiers?
Particularly be for folks who lost somebody. I mean, anybody who has gone through a loss to somebody through violence or something other, but even disease. I mean, you get mad. And I mean, the Civil War is filled with these losses. I mean, they're ramping up the numbers of, you know, people who will die because of this war. And it can't help. And, you live in a town like Murfreesboro that gets torn to shreds. I mean, how can you not hold a grudge against the people that made this happen as far as you're concerned, which would be the guys in blue in this case? And, you know, it will take 20, 30 years for, you know, for people to begin settling down and basically be led by the veterans themselves as they begin to have some reunions together and things like that. And start the process of healing, and that's actually when you start seeing the first national military parks like Chickamauga, Vicksburg, Gettysburg start to get established, which sets the stage for us later on moving into the 20th century. So it's all kind of part and parcel of the same, the healing process that anybody would have to go through, that we go through when we lose one loved one in our family. Well, the United States family lost 620,000 members of its family in 4 years. Takes a little longer to go through that process.
Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on WGNS.
Yes, I was just. Am I on?
Yes.
I was just going to ask. You know, in a lot of wars, you heard where they lost a lot of horses, and I never had heard the statistic. I was just wondering, did we lose a lot during the Civil War or not? And I'll hang up and listen.
Alrighty. What about that? The horses.
Most numbers that I've seen done by historians is that we lost well over 1 million horses and mules during the Civil War. Our four-legged friends are the ones that basically made the army move. They were integral to transporting supplies. They rolled the artillery out. Can't have cavalry without a horse. And so they were a big part of the army. And we did some figuring at Stones River, and you know, there's some estimations involved here, but probably close to about 3,000 to 4,000 horses or mules died as a result of the Battle of Stones River. So nearly as many as we had outright dead on the battlefield of human beings. And so they suffer. I even had a fella 7 or 8 years ago who was a horse breeder and also kind of an amateur historian who has been tracking and has told me that he knows of 7 breeds of horses that literally went extinct during the Civil War because we used up all the breeding stock.
Wow.
They're just not around. You can't find
them. And in horse country, that is a significant story.
That would be huge.
Right.
893-1450 is our number, 893-1450. We will continue the conversation. We're talking about the sesquicentennial of the Civil War and a special symposium, a 2-day symposium, this Friday and Saturday here in Murfreesboro, this Friday and Saturday. We'll tell you more about that in just a little while. Stay with us.
Sack on my back, my rifle on my shoulder. I'm going away to Shiloh, and there I'll be a soldier.
Catch up on MTCS Sports Saturday mornings at 11. Brian Barrett and John Deacons host Cougar Corner here on WGNS.
AM, FM, online.
Does your home have foundation problems? Bricks cracking, doors sticking, basement walls bowing, floors uneven, or water problems? Where do you turn? What name do you know and trust? Call United Structural Systems at 227-2275. For over 17 years, United Structural Systems has stabilized, restored, and guaranteed over 5,800 homes and businesses in Middle Tennessee. We know that you, like our customers, want a restored home, a lifetime guarantee, and the peace of mind that United Structural Systems, a locally owned company, will be here for you. Call United Structural Systems today at 227-2275 or visit them on the web at usstn.com. United Structural Systems, known best for being better.
We'll guarantee our best. Call USS.
WeatherEye.
For the forecast area today, mainly sunny skies, highs in the low 80s, we'll have a south wind around 5 miles per hour. Clear skies tonight, low 53. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Thaluber.
Currently 55.
For years and years, I've been telling you about Bell Furniture. Perry Bell buys in trailer truckload quantities and passes the savings on to you. First quality name brand furniture about half price every day at Bell Furniture. I know you've heard about Jameson's Marriott mattress. It's half price at Bell Furniture. Save with Perry Bell and Linda Ferris at Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna. Haiti raised horses. Do you love to hunt? Do you just look around for a place to build that dream home of yours? A place that has rolling hills and acres of beautiful land. Well, let me tell you, this Saturday morning at 10:30, you need to be at 2925 Coleman Hill Road. This Saturday morning, an absolute auction right there. Sims Realty and Auction will be handling 4 different tracts of land. One of those is 14 acres, another is 10 acres, another 11 acres, and still another tract has 16 acres. They all have perkable sites. And what beautiful, beautiful land. Check it out. Be there. Don't let it pass by. Definitely. If you love horses, if you love to hunt, if you're just looking for that perfect place to build your dream home, there is that site waiting for you on Coleman Hill Road. I've been around that area many times, and it is gorgeous out there. 2925 Coleman Hill Road. For information, get with Larry Sims and David Gilliam. They're in charge of it. Larry Sims, David Gilliam, they know what they're doing, and they can help you too. That auction again, this Saturday morning at 10:30 Saturday morning at 2925 Coleman Hill Road.
Receive breaking news, sports scores, traffic, and weather bulletins on your cell phone. Sign up for text alerts at WGNSradio.com.
We're back again, and we're talking about the sesquicentennial of the Civil War and the big symposium coming up this Friday and Saturday. I'll have to say, I am truly impressed, Gib. You've been name-dropping, and some of the people you have who will be there to share their stories, I'm in awe. Who else did you say was going to be there?
Well, let me mention just a couple others. In the afternoon at the battlefield, we'll have Dwight Pitt Cathley, who is a retired former chief historian of the National Park Service. And he's been all around the country talking about the Civil War for many years now. While he was chief historian, he would be on the History Channel and C-SPAN and everything talking about the causes of the Civil War. And he's going to wrap up the speaker portion of the program on Saturday at the battlefield, and he'll tie the whole package together. I think he's an excellent speaker, and I think everybody will enjoy him. And in addition to Dwight, we're going to have a park ranger from the Andrew Johnson Home National Historic Site in Greenville, Tennessee, come over, and he portrays Andrew Johnson. Now, many people don't know that Andrew Johnson, in addition to being president, before that was the military governor of Tennessee during Lincoln's first term. Tennessee was the first state to fall back into Union hands in 1862, and so the Union established a military governor in Nashville, and that was Andrew Johnson. And this park ranger will portray Andrew Johnson in his role as military governor in his first program on Saturday at 2:30. And then at 3:30, he's going to portray Andrew Johnson as the Reconstruction President. After Lincoln was assassinated, Andrew Johnson had become Lincoln's vice president after the election of 1864. And the park ranger will portray Johnson in his role as president, and that's all Saturday afternoon.
You mentioned C-SPAN. I understand they're going to be here also.
Right. C-SPAN will be videotaping the programs at the Presbyterian Church, First Presbyterian Church, downtown Murfreesboro, on Saturday morning. So all of the talks will later air on one of the C-SPAN channels. And in addition, Nashville Public Television will record the Friday evening talk and the Saturday afternoon programs with Dwight and with the Stones River Musicianers and Andrew Johnson. And so all of these programs will later be available on one TV channel or another.
Does that mean they possibly might be available on DVD as well?
Well, the NPT material we will have copies of, and we can make it available for non-commercial uses. So it'll air on WNPT, one of their digital channels, and then we will also have it, and we may use it for programs at the park or in other non-commercial venues. So, yeah, it is possible.
We only have about 10 seconds left. How can people find out more? Is there a number they can call?
They can call the battlefield about the symposium. It's area code 615-893-9501, and we'll take registrations right up to the day.
Thank you for joining us.